Comencem aquesta segona jornada del seminari sobre la performance, sobre aquests orígens. I avui és un gran plaer per nosaltres poder presentar a Alice Lagay, que ella va créixer entre Anglaterra i França i va estudiar filosofia i literatura a les universitats d'Edimburg i a la Universitat Lliure de Berlín. Des de l'any 1902 ha estat professora i investigadora de filosofia al Centre de Col·laboració i Recerca Cultures del Performatiu a Berlín. És autora de la tesi doctoral Cap a una filosofia de la veu, Reflexions en el so i el silenci del llenguatge humà, del 2007. I la seva investigació s'ha centrat des d'aleshores en la performance del silenci dels secrets i en el seu interès en la relació entre el teatre i la filosofia. A més de nombrosos textos en alemany, en els camps de la llengua i la filosofia, les publicacions en anglès inclouen Metaphysics of Performance on the Relationship Between Theatre and Philosophy del 2001, Between Sound and Silence, Voice in the History of Psychoanalysis del 2001 i Passivity at Work, A Conversation of an Element in the Works of Giorgio Agamben del 2009. Alice Lagay està actualment organitzant una conferència internacional sobre performance i filosofia que es presentarà a Berlín l'abril d'aquest mateix any, del 2010.
To which I would like to invite you.
Thank you very much.
I will say something about it later.
Avui ens parlarà concepts of performance and performativity between active and passive. Thank you, Alice, for coming.
Thank you. Very, thank you very much.
Very pleased.
Thank you. Thank you, Ima, also, for the invitation. It's just really, I've already said how happy I am to be here. It's great to escape the Berlin winter a little bit. And I want to apologize for speaking. Let me just say that my Catalan is not very good.
I know.
And my Spanish is even worse. So please feel free to interrupt and to ask me to repeat it if you need to. Oh, do I have to press a button?
Ask
you.
No, the Bertus is okay now.
No, he said
it's not. Is it okay or not? Not working?
No,
thank you. Shall I move?
Yes.
Where are you?
Okay. CNN.
It's a press conference. Can you hear me now? Is that better? Okay. Okay, so today I want to talk about concepts of performance and performativity and how within the project that I work in, which is an interdisciplinary research project in Berlin, how our approach to these concepts has developed and maybe changed over the last 12 years. The SFB, or the Collaborate Research Center, Cultures of the Performative, or Performing Cultures, in German it's called Kulturen des Performativen, is an interdisciplinary research center that is chaired by Erika Fischer-Lichter, who you might have heard of. She's quite a prominent professor of theater studies in Germany. And this research project has received funding from the German Research Council for 12 years to study different concepts of performance and performativity. We're now coming to an end of that time. And the center encompasses many, many different projects from a very wide range of different disciplines, ranging from Theaterwissenschaften, theater studies, philosophy, English philology, educational science, religious studies, music, ethnology, historical anthropology, sport studies, literature, film studies, and many more. So I'm just giving you an idea, medieval studies, it's historical as well as contemporary. And of course, for each discipline, each discipline has its own history, its own methods of working, and so each different subject will have a different approach and a different understanding of what performance means for its particular context, and also of what the so-called performative turn means in that different place. So don't worry, I'm not even going to try and cover or mention all of them. Ultimately, my focus is philosophical because I come from a philosophical background. And so perhaps it also makes it quite abstract and theoretical, which I would hope therefore applies to many different contexts. That's something that we can debate. Now, one interesting thing to note is that it's not only the research center that is very interdisciplinary. The concept of performance and performativity itself is interdisciplinary. It covers many different aspects of human behavior and different realms of human inquiry. So when we talk about performance, sometimes it's not quite clear exactly what we mean. And so what I want to do is to begin by problematizing the concept of performance a little bit and to show the different contexts in which it carries meaning. The word itself, of course, is not new, at least not in the English language. If you look in any good dictionary, you'll find different definitions of the word performance. It's interesting how it has then been translated into different languages with a new meaning, to carry a new meaning. I just looked at one dictionary that happened to be on my desk, the New Collins Dictionary, and there are already five different meanings. The act or process or art of performing, which immediately already puts it in a kind of artistic context. An artistic or dramatic production, for instance, last night's performance was terrible. The manner or quality of how something functions, like a machine's performance. Or the mode of conduct or behavior, especially when distasteful. For instance, what did you mean by that performance at the restaurant last night? There's always a kind of negative connotation. And finally, any tiresome procedure. For instance, you know, the performance of getting the kids ready to go out in the snow every day is quite a kind of performance. So what I found interesting just by looking at this dictionary was that we can already conclude that performance relates to human activity, although sometimes machines too. It points to or emphasizes the way something is carried out, in other words, the mode, the particular mode. And it tends to always somehow involve an audience in one way or another. And also that there's something of a negative connotation, a negative quality in these definitions, implying that there is already a kind of a value judgment, a reference to some kind of social or moral standard implicit in the definition of performance. So much for the dictionary. As you know, when we talk about performance and performativity in an artistic or academic context, we mean something a little different. And this has to do with what has been called, and I've already mentioned it, the performative turn in the humanities, which in a way just generally is a kind of movement that occurred in the, let's say, second half of the 20th century. Although some of our disciplines in the research center look at performative turns in further in the past. But anyway, let's say since the 60s. And this performative turn relates not just to a movement within the dramatic arts, but it can be traced to a variety of different disciplines. I'm going to focus on four. First of all, linguistics and the philosophy of language, which generally relate to the question how humans perform language. Secondly, social theory or psychology, how language and ritualized behavior create subjectivity. Anthropology, or more broadly, cultural studies, where performance and performativity of rituals and of theater are focused upon. And of course, also art and, or performance art and theater studies, where on the one hand, you know, the question of the relationship between performance and text, or between performance art and theatre in a more traditional, conventional sense, are the kind of the places where the debate occurs. Now, of course, I've named these four very general. There are many more. You know, you could point to other places where the performative turn is relevant. I'm going to say very briefly something about these four realms, just to give you an idea of where our references come from, and the question is, you know, how do they interlink? So for the realm of linguistics and the philosophy of language, there are two main references that I think point in interesting directions. The first is the linguistics of Noam Chomsky. In his Aspects of the Theory of Syntax, Chomsky makes a clear distinction between linguistic competence and linguistic performance. And it's the relationship between the two that is relevant here. So competence describes the ideal general grammatical knowledge that any speaker of a language must have in order to formulate a particular utterance. And performance, on the other hand, is the actual articulation of that knowledge, what the speaker actually says. And there's, of course, always a slight discrepancy, more or less, between the ideal and the real. Chomsky's distinction between competence and performance can be seen as a version of Saussure's earlier separation between the basic organizing principles of language. He talks about la langue and la parole, and both belong to a traditional view that emphasizes abstract principles extrapolated from a variety of individual examples. And this is a structuralist approach to linguistics that relies heavily on the assumption that there is some sort of transcendental system behind any spoken language. And this separation of language into two worlds, one concrete and one abstract, or the world of the rule, the schema, and the application of that rule, on the other hand, can be seen as, you know, analogous to many different tendencies in other fields that echo a kind of Platonic metaphysical distinction between the perceived world and the realm of ideas or forms, which everything else derives from. And I find it interesting that it's precisely against this metaphysical idea that or at least in a kind of spirit of awareness of the constructedness of that system, that much of the thinking that relates to performance and performativity is defined. So there's a kind of anti-metaphysical drive. Now, within the realm of linguistics, what we see is a shift of focus from this abstract idea of competence to the realm of performance, a shift which has given rise to kind of new areas of study for linguistics, for instance, sociolinguistics or conversation analysis, an increased interest in the voice and in the embodied nature of language, the rhythm, the mimetic processes, the dynamics, the general dynamics of human interaction become more interesting. And the second major event, I've already put it up, is the introduction of speech act theory, which goes back to the English philosopher John Austin. Very, very influential when it comes to the philosophy of performance, amongst other things. Austin recognized that language is not just used to describe the world, it actually brings that world about. And so, whereas perhaps formerly there was a strong conceptual difference between the realm of saying and the realm of doing, with speech act theory, saying becomes doing. And this was a major breakthrough in the realm of philosophy with regard to the relationship to language and the world in general. The gap, you know, becomes smaller, if you like. And this leads to a re-evaluation of the surface level, again, the you know, the actualized level of linguistic phenomena, leading also to a shift of focus from the abstract to the visible materiality of the event, and an increase of interest in the aesthetic, not the aesthetic, the aesthetic, the perceivable, that which touches the senses. Major influence Austin had on both the American analytical pragmatic tradition as well as continental, picked up by Derrida and others. I won't go into detail. There'd be much more to say about speech act theory, but I won't go into any further detail here. I want to jump to the next realm, which is the relationship between performance, performativity, and identity. And I begin with a very quick reference to a philosopher who's been very influential, particularly in the realm of gender studies. You've guessed her name, Judith Butler. Central to Butler is a view of gender not as a given social or cultural attribute, but as a category that is constructed through performance, constructed through doing, in other words. And this is one of the central purposes of this position, is to challenge the traditional essentialist view that gender identity is necessarily conditioned by biological difference. Butler emphasized the fact that a person is not born with either feminine or masculine characteristics, but that gender identity is the result or the effect of acquired gendered behavior, assimilated from the codes of conduct that define the culture into which a person is born. She distinguishes two different modes of performativity, and I think this is interesting here too. One has to do with what the subject does, how one's behavior establishes the person that one is or is perceived to be, and on the other hand, what is done to the subject. How, for instance, a culture's language, prevailing discourse, how these things impose an identity on the people. And both modalities of performativity undermine the essentialist notion of subjecthood as something that is nature or God-given. Language and behavior are, traditionally seen to be the expression of something, and here it's a constructivist model. On the one hand, what I am, my identity, is defined by what I do, how I behave, how I dress, how I present myself, and how this performance is perceived. But this doesn't mean that I'm completely free to choose my identity, for Butler says there is no I that exists behind. Again, we have this anti-metaphysical movement. There's no I that exists behind the performance of my identity. And yet, on the other hand, the nature and the scope of my behavior is defined by the codes of the culture that I'm brought up in, and the degree of success that that culture has had in coloring, in creating my identity. She quotes Nietzsche saying, "There is no being behind doing, effecting, becoming. The doer is merely a fiction added to the deed. The deed is everything." Again, this anti-metaphysical stance. Judith Butler, her theory relied heavily on Austin's concept of performative language. She looks at the origin of this, of the creation, or the kind of process of gendering which begins when the child is born. It's a girl, it's a boy. This performative utterance that begins this whole process. And she also relies on Derrida's concept of iterability and rupture, by which she explains that repetition, through repetition, not only is an order of things re-established, reproduced, but also it can give rise to change, a subversion of that structure. I want to just briefly mention another thinker from a slightly different realm and earlier than Butler, who also recognized the constructedness of identity. I'm thinking of Irving Goffman, sociologist, very different background to Butler, and his most influential texts were written in the 50s. But there's a connection between them insofar as Goffman also sought to present identity as something that is performed, as therefore something that cannot be considered outside of the context of human interactions. He makes use of a dramaturgical approach in drawing on theatrical concepts such as the stage, such as performance, audience, props, scenery, to analyze the workings of social interaction and self-presentation in everyday situations. So although Goffman does not make explicit use of the notion of performativity, his approach is representative of this performative turn in the sense that he relates personal identity and selfhood to various roles that a person plays on the stage of social interaction. A person's sense of self is always necessarily embodied in a certain social role. And a person may have different roles, but the I is always constituted only within one of these roles. Every individual is therefore a network of various I roles. But again, this doesn't mean that the individual is completely free, because the society and the social context define not only the kind of roles that can be played, but also to a large extent the codes of behavior, the customs and rules that determine how a certain role is expected to be played. So the audience plays an important part. Whether or not a person's staged identity is successful depends on the extent to which the performance is credible, consistent, and appropriate in the eyes. A nasty word, but important. Appropriate in the eyes of the audience. So performance is performance for the other in Goffman's eyes. The performativity of his theory is thus that identity is not seen as something pre-existing its particular dramatic presentation, but rather as constituted by or as an effect in the eyes of the audience. There we go, the presentation of self and the theater of everyday life. I come now to the third realm of anthropology. Again, there would be a lot to say here. I'm going to mention again just two main references. Unlike Goffman, Turner was less interested in analyzing the social phenomena within the theatrical paradigm than in particular crisis situations. I think this is important for what we're interested in here as well. Turner says, for Goffman, all the world's a stage, the world of social interaction anyway, and is full of ritual acts. But for me, Turner, the dramaturgical phase begins when crises arise in the daily flow of social interaction. And I wonder whether, you know, live art is perhaps one of those crises. Turner defines social drama as a processually structured break in the regular course of events caused by a conflict between individuals or groups within a community. And he identifies four phases in the structure of social dramas. First of all, a breach in the regular norm governed social relations lead to. Secondly, a crisis in which people are pressured to take sides. And this is followed by a liminal phase, or a redressive or remedial procedure of reflexive analysis and self-scrutiny, in which the community works out an outcome. So there's different phases, and it's interesting that this in itself has been related back to Aristotle's Poetics. And also largely inspired by, the groundbreaking work by Van Gennep on rites de passage, on situations, often ceremonious situations, in which a community marks the transition from one state to another, from peace to war, from plague to health, or in the case of individuals, from childhood to adulthood, these places of transition. Turner was particularly interested in the notion of a liminal phase that marks the threshold or transition between one state and another. He distinguishes liminal and liminoid activity. The liminal refers to the traditional, often cyclical, community-oriented ritual and theatrical activities, predominant in tribal and early agrarian societies. And the liminoid is the more individualistic kind of out-of-work activities, such as leisure and sport, as well as the experimental art performances that flourish in modern societies. So liminal is associated with more like tradition and a kind of conservative function within a society, and liminoid relate to play and experiment and are thus considered to be occasions for resistance to tradition. And again, I think these terms can be applied to performance art. The main characteristics of liminal and liminoid activity is the state of flow. It's conceived as, I quote, an interior state which can be described as the merging of action and awareness, the holistic sensation present when we act with total involvement, a state in which action follows action according to an internal logic with no apparent need for conscious intervention on our part. Flow can be experienced in play and sport and in artistic performance and ritual or religious ritual. So the main characteristic of flow is this kind of loss of ego, a dissolution of one's awareness of past and future. Only the now matters. Self-consciousness and reflexivity stand in opposition to the flow experience. Reflexivity is an arrest of the flow process, a throwing of it back against itself. The distinctive quality of performance genres, as both ritual and theatrical or performance art activities, according to Turner, is a dialectic relationship between flow and reflexivity. That is, a peculiar union of primary processes where action and awareness are one, and secondary processes where cognitive discriminations are made. So perhaps I can conclude with Turner by saying that, this is his is the notion of a structural connection. There's a structural connection between the real life of social drama and the realm of cultural ritual and theatre. And a focus on process is also important, an emphasis on movement as opposed to stasis. So Victor Turner was an anthropologist whose interest in the connection between theatre and ritual led him to study theatre theory and contemporary art. In contrast, Richard Schechner is a man of the theatre whose interest in contemporary forms of theatre led him to study rituals and cultural performance activities. So in a way, they are complementary of each other. Perhaps one of Schechner's most influential concepts is that of restored behaviour. Carlson, who writes a book on performance, refers to it as this: pretending to be someone other than oneself is a common example of a particular kind of human behavior that Schechner labels restored behavior, a title under which he groups actions consciously separated from the person doing them. So theater and other role-playing, trances, shamanism and rituals. Schechner's useful concept of restored behavior points to a quality of performance that involves a certain distance between self and behavior, analogous to that between an actor and the role that the actor plays on stage. Restored behavior is twice behaved behavior, pointing to the process of repetition involved in certain kinds of acts that are performed for an audience. He underlines a peculiar state of continued awareness, or double consciousness, he calls it, on the part of both the actors and the audience. It's a perception of some original behavior which the performed action relates to, but which it necessarily differs from. So to perform restored behavior is to understand and interpret it, requires a curious form of double existence. to be two, or to be in two mutually exclusive frames, both here and now, as well as elsewhere. This notion of suspension or of being in between states relates to Turner's liminal, of course. It echoes it, and also sheds an interesting light on the nature of entertainment, which stems from entretenir, to hold between. The nature of restored or replicated behavior is clearly analogous to the concept of citationality. I'm thinking of Derrida, you know, the repetition, the quotation. Again, also, the concept of mimesis is most commonly associated with the traditional vision of theater as that which imitates life. Not only does such a view imply a clear separation between two realms, art and life. Again, we have this binary structure. It also assumes a clear hierarchy between the two. And Schechner's work on the relationship between social drama and aesthetic drama reveals that the boundaries are much more fluid. He proposed to try and visualize this relationship the following kind of infinity diagram. It reveals the two-way interconnection between social and stage drama. The theater person uses the actions of social life as raw material for the production of aesthetic drama, while the social activist uses techniques derived from the theater to support the activities of social drama. Okay, I come to the last place I'm going to focus on. I'm not going to say very much about performance art because that's your business. I'll limit myself to a couple of very general remarks. Performance art emerged as a form of artistic expression mainly in the 60s and 70s. Marvin Carlson, I'll refer to him later again, traces the roots of performance on the one hand to modernism and the avant-garde theatre experiments of the early 20th century, and on the other hand to postmodern, post-structuralist theory. And this is interesting because it shows the ambiguous character. Because coming from the modernist strain, we have the non-narrative, non-discursive, non-mimetic tendency, whereas the post-structuralist points to the fusing of boundaries between painting and sculpture, theater, music, and events, as well as the tendency in performance art to focus upon the process, the producedness, the seams-showing quality of a work, and the impossibility of presencing. The impossible necessity of presencing, if you like. It's interesting this relationship between conventional theatre and performance, although how this relationship is understood depends very much on what tradition you're coming from. I think, for instance, America and Germany have very different understandings of theatre. German theatre has always been more performative in a way than, for instance, I don't know, classical Broadway. So it's a complex can of worms. But one important thing to note is that the performance movement originated as a radical attempt to create a new non-text based theatre. Here a quick reference to Fischer-Lichter, whose book, The Transformative Power of Performance, highlights these elements, the corporeality, the materiality, the reference to the body, to emergence of meaning and to eventness. So the direct physical experience that is relevant to or that defines performativity, and incorporation, a kind of active becoming of the audience, and the liveness, which involves a kind of contingency, a Zufälligkeit. And also another aspect would be, a huge big aspect would be this anti-theatricality in relation to a kind of desacralization of the event. I'm going to mention another thinker who I find very interesting, Josette Ferral. a Canadian theorist, underlines the way in which performance art attempts to exclude theatricality by rejecting illusion and by calling to attention elements and objects that the theatre would normally ignore. So in performance, marginalised or fragmented elements that are always present in the theatre but rarely acknowledged, for example, a part of the body or the fragment of a gesture or a particular sound, are brought to the foreground, kind of microscoped in a way, isolated, magnified, and turned into central independent wholes. In a word, decontextualized, thus presenting the spectators with an experience in vitro and in slow motion of what usually takes place on stage. So instead of constituting merely the carrier or the context for an intended signification, the body and space are themselves the very meaning of performance. Space becomes existential to the point of ceasing to exist as a setting and place. It no longer surrounds and encloses the performance, but like the body, becomes part of the performance to such an extent that it cannot be distinguished from it. It is the performance, she says. So in avoiding theatrical narration and in turning into the very subject, she speaks of the accessories, or even more significantly, of the competencies, a Chomskyan term, the competencies of theatre. Performance explores the underside that theatre, giving the audience a glimpse of its inside, its reverse side, its hidden face. And from this we can ask whether performance is to theatre what deconstruction is to philosophy. Her vision of performance is precisely for that reason interesting, I think, because it establishes a connection between performance and theatre, as well as between performance and deconstruction. So she's in fact implying a parallel set of connections both between philosophy and theatre and between deconstruction and philosophy, which I tried to kind of visualize with this. Diagrams are always attractive and very dangerous because they make things visible in a way that probably misrepresents them. But I kind of like the way it flies in. Like, so performance and theater in their inter relationship, and deconstruction and philosophy. I've said a few things about performance and performativity in four realms: the realm of language, the realm of identity and subject constitution, the realm of culture and of art. And of course, what's interesting is how they interconnect. I tried to make it visible in this way. The boundaries are soft and they feed into each other in different multiple different ways, and there's this deconstructive undercurrent which kind of allows for it all, brings it all about. They all feed into each other. How can I try and draw out the common characteristics of these different approaches? First of all, seems to me that in all these different realms there is a turn towards the body, a turn towards the surface, a turn towards materiality, towards mediality. There's also a turn towards the live moment, towards the event, which involves a very particular appropriation of the audience, not as a kind of just passive receiver, but as an involved witness to the event. Thirdly, the processuality, the temporality, the becoming, it involves also a contingency, a kind of unforeseeable nature, a risk factor as well. Also, perhaps the I haven't noted this here, but the kind of unrepeatable nature, which is problematic, but has to do with this time, the liveness of it. And again, I've mentioned it a few times, and to conclude, this anti-metaphysical, anti-theatrical stance, which of course begs the question, well, what is the relationship between philosophy, between metaphysics and theatre? It's a very long a long story that I won't go into now, although I might do. I can refer you to a little book that I wrote that is 10 years old now, but I can hand it around if you like. It relates to the relationship between theatre and philosophy. And also, again, later I'll mention this, I want to invite you to this conference that I'm organising in Berlin in April, which is all about the relationship between philosophy and theatre or performance. To conclude, I'd like to just open the discussion in a way, or before I open the discussion, I'd like to just maybe glance towards a kind of potential future for performative theory and bring in a few critical points. First of all, and I think I've emphasized it, the dynamic nature not only of performance and performativity, but of the very theorization thereof. So in this sense, without explaining them in detail, I just want to point to the following questions. To the extent that performance or the performative turn leads to a heightened awareness of the corporality, of the materiality, what can be said, or what is there to be said about absence, about emptiness? What roles do these play, and how can we theorize them within the performative framework? I think is a provocation and an important perspective. Secondly, to the extent that performance and performativity lead to an increased interest in mediality, for example, in the voice, where is the place of stillness? Where is the place of silence? What is the materiality? How can we theorize the materiality of silence? These are kind of the challenges for philosophical approach. Again, to the extent that performance and the performative turn leads to an increased emphasis on human activity, what about the passive side? What about latency? What about restrained, refrained behavior? And these are kind of directions that I think a lot of live art uses, but we still lack somehow a proper theoretical framework to kind of appreciate the passive side. There's this notion that, you know, performance kind of makes everything in the world human-made. But I think there's probably a limit to that view. What do we receive in order to make? How much passivity is actually involved in every action? And to what extent is the passive in itself a kind of doing? Again, that's a direction that I think might be fruitful. And finally, to the extent that the performance or the performative turn can be seen to lead to a heightened awareness of the productivity and the creativity of meaning constitutive actions, is it not also the place to reflect upon the destructive, to consider the destructive element within performativity, and perhaps also the other side, a productive quality of destruction? You know, it's a kind of difficult terrain, but I see that as a place where the theory and where it touches also on ethics and a political dimension. So I leave you with these hopefully provoking questions. The final page is just some of the references that I used for the talk. And again, I can put this page back up again, but I want to just really invite you to the Performance and Philosophy Conference in Berlin on the 23rd and 24th of April. If you're interested, please contact me and I'll give you the program. That's it for now. Thank you.
Veieu alguna pregunta? Alguna qüestió? There is any question?
I think we might have a...
Yes.
Could you say a bit more about this idea of a ceremony marking a transition from one state to another in a ritualistic or not ritualistic fashion?
Are you referring to the to what I call the liminal? Or the,
or, yeah, it was when you were talking about Victor Turner.
Yeah.
Could you maybe just elaborate on that a little bit more?
Well, it's all about context, isn't it? I think we've got an expert here somewhere. Where's the French lady? Oh, she's not here, she's gone. What a shame, because she would have been able to talk about that at great extent. Yeah, I mean, what I wanted to draw out here was the relationship or how the different realms feed into each other, and how for Turner, he was an anthropologist who looked at different rituals of transition, which are the main kind of religious ceremonies are always initiation ceremonies. Yes. That mark the transition from one state to another, and he tried to analyze these states and kind of point to different moments, different structures, and they have this very structured process where there's a kind of an introduction, a build-up, a crisis, and a resolution. So you come out with a kind of cathartic event, which totally kind of corresponds to traditional drama. You come out differently. And what's interesting to me is that is also precisely what happens with performative language. You know, I mean, Austin described in particular also religious ceremonies, or you know, the marriage ritual, when the priest pronounces the word, you are hereby man and wife, something happens, something is transformed. That again is a liminal event. I don't know if I can say all that much more about it now. Yes.
What you just described, is that
Well, it all depends what you mean by metaphysics. This is the problem, isn't it? I mean, I've taken here a very, very, very general definition of metaphysics, which is that basically it's just the idea that there are two worlds that are interconnected, and that there's a hierarchy. There's a hierarchy by which that which is kind of the principle behind is that which the philosopher is really interested in. Now, you know, you can apply it to a slightly different context and say, you know, in contemporary philosophy, the metaphysical moment is on the surface. It's not that there's no metaphysics. It's just that it's a metaphysics of the immanent rather than the transcendent. So immanence is on the plane, as Deleuze would say, of the immanent, of that which is here, or the. It's still metaphysical, but so depending on what kind of definition you take, I think I would agree though that these kind of crises moments, and in fact this is another term I haven't used, but we could introduce the term intensity. There's a kind of a heightened intensity in such moments. They can be artistic or ritual or philosophical. They can happen in discourse. In fact, indeed, they do happen sometimes in reading. You know, if you get a really good bit and you suddenly understand it, you come out differently as a result. And that is, if you like, almost a spiritual kind of metaphysics. Yeah. So I'm not against metaphysics, but I do think that there has been an attempt to somehow kind of reshuffle or free oneself from a static idea of metaphysics to turn it into a more dynamic one, and I find that quite inspiring. Yeah.
I kind of get the impression that what you mean by anti-metaphysical in performance is actually anti-transcendental rather than anti-metaphysical per se. Is that fair?
I think that probably in a way that doesn't solve the issue, because it's just a kind of translation, a use of a different word. I think what I try to do in the book that this refers to is to reappropriate or to make a space for what I call metaphysics in performance, and to say that there is something metaphysical about performance, but it's not the representation of something that already exists elsewhere. It's the presentation of the live, of time, of the now. And there, you know, you could argue that the now is the most transcendental of phenomena, because it's impossible to grasp, as Hegel demonstrated, you know. And so there's something transient, there's something ephemeral, there's something impossible to grasp with words, there's something that goes beyond, even though it's here and it's now. Yes, if transcendent, yeah, I don't know enough Kant to know what his right definition of transcendental is, but I know enough about the idea of that it can't be the representation of a strict structure that is predetermined. It has to be the evocation, the kind of tuning into the present.
In the section you talk about, I think it was Schechner, and you're talking about the theatre and performance as a double kind of double consciousness. I'd just like to know if you have any comments about the whole idea of authenticity in this, you know, in both social drama and theatrical drama, because it seems that this is the key issue here, you know, of if we're going to go towards an evaluation at all of both theatre, like when we say, this is good theatre or this is a good performance, what we're actually perhaps talking about is authenticity. Now, I'd just like to hear your comments on this.
Well, it's got to be what it's about, and it's probably got to... the reason why it's likely not to be that easy is because the concept of authenticity is so damn difficult to really define, isn't it? And it's probably a place where paradox resides, in the sense that, you know, when is something authentic? You have this sense that it's authentic when it's not staged, when it's not rehearsed.
And how would you base this on?
And yet, that's what one would think. But then, of course, that's far too simple, isn't it? Because first of all, there is no such thing, arguably, as the totally the pure, the untouched by reflection, the totally unrehearsed, the unique, the never repeated. So, you know, you know, that's what deconstruction is all about, isn't it? Showing the traces of repetition in every event, which, you know, if you were going to be kind of pedantic about it, you could say, well, that therefore it's not authentic. But that would be a misunderstanding, I think, of what authentic is. I think authentic is perhaps the you know, not trying to hide the traces. You know, so it's kind of almost a not cosmetic. You know, you could say there's authentic and then there's cosmetic, and there's one branch of cosmetics which is trying to hide all traces of constructedness, but probably it's got to be somewhere in between, hasn't it?
But if you take the deconstruction, the model of deconstruction, then could you not, by its own logic, within its own logic, deconstruct all activity, what you call performance activity, including social drama, including everyday life, down to something that's reducible to just because there's no I, as you, yeah. you know, just a series of actions, which would mean that there's very little distinction between social drama, everyday life activity, and performance, because we are performing.
I think you're right. If you follow the road of logic, that is the outcome. But luckily, logic has its limits, especially in the world of art and philosophy, in fact. And what, you know, without kind of falling into a kind of person cult, you know, we do experience that there are that there is talent, you know, that someone you know, if when Derrida performs deconstruction, it's just bloody better than when some other people try and do it. You know what I mean? So there is this difference, which you have to kind of, which you can kind of witness. You know, that would perhaps be authenticity. I don't know. Did you want to?
Yeah. I just wanted to say that performance art is a sort of art of the desire to be in the moment, yes. presence in the moment,
yes.
with a certain consciousness. So I was wondering about your ideas on consciousness, in the sense that authentic or with or without intention can influence consciousness and be directed through performance. I think that performance art is a sort of multitasker. When you're thinking of when you're talking about dynamics and the presence and the absence, I think it is an art form which takes all that into account yes. in a certain consciousness.
Yes.
So I think in all this, that consciousness is a sort of, there's an added element that we're not talking about, intention.
I think you're probably right, but we'd have to distinguish different types of consciousness at different times of the work, isn't there? There's the consciousness that's planning and thinking and, you know, projecting and imagining and then working out, and that's quite different from the consciousness that is at work, you know, when a performer performs, the kind of flow that then occurs.
I would call that intention, not consciousness, necessarily. I don't know that consciousness is necessarily a broken up thing like that.
Don't you think that there are different levels of consciousness, though?
Absolutely, but I don't know that they're like integrated into acts in a sort of separate way from the next act. For me, consciousness is something that's flowing in a way.
It's like flowing.
Yes. That would be brought into focus through certain actions.
Well, then, is challenged by the structures, you know, that we deal with. You know, that there's a beginning and an end and a timetable, and your performance is going to be now, and it's got to end here. You know, there's a kind of that flow of consciousness then has to somehow relate to and negotiate with the constraints of the timetable, for example. You know, how would you define consciousness? Does it have content, or is it the kind of the transcendence of content? You know, if you go into a mystical tradition, then it's ultimate consciousness is when you manage through meditation to filter out.
Yes, so ultimately we always end up talking about the spiritual, the unknown, because we don't really know, maybe. But in performance art, sometimes knowing is not necessary, that as part of the art form.
I think I would agree, yes.
Would you say that we could describe, using the liminal liminoid, that performance art tends more towards the liminal rather than the liminoid?
Well, yes, precisely because it goes into that direction, that kind of dissolving of boundaries, that and towards the ritualized and towards the spiritual in that sense. perhaps, I mean, you know, it's always dangerous to kind of make clear-cut definitions.
No, I mean, as a general ground.
As a general ground, as a general
ground. Towards where it's going. Yesterday, Tracy gave, at the end of was talking about this going towards the metaphysical, more than metaphysical. And again, without getting bogged down in what metaphysical really means, but I think if it means anything in the field of performance art, maybe the clues are in this liminal, ritualistic, which is undefined by religion or other language, but is a language in itself, within its own context. But it's still a ritual.
What I also kind of like about that is that if you look at it from a cultural perspective, it's hard to pinpoint the decision or the intentionality in it. It's not like you decide to go and when the group doesn't decide consciously to go to church and perform the baptism. It's just something that they do. You know what I mean? There's a mimetic draw, and it only actually is it's a conscious decision to refrain or to not belong or to replace that ritual with another one. That's where consciousness of the kind that I'm talking about, I don't know if it's quite the same as yours, comes into place as a resistance to the cultural. So, I mean, that's why I'm reluctant to put performance art completely there. The liminal is at least for Turner, I think, he just uses it as an attempt to describe what goes on in these cultural events that just happen and that constitute society, that constitute a particular culture. And, you know, and they could be these rituals or they might be other ones. And, you know, it would be the task of a cultural critique, in a way, to claim that sport has now replaced going to church, or whatever. You know, the liminoid is replacing the liminal, in that sense. I don't know. The fitness center.
I wanted to ask you about sport. So, seems a good moment. It was really interesting at the beginning to hear the description of the project, the interdisciplinary project, and that sports studies was one of the disciplines, because I think when we just talk within our singular disciplines, we get stuck sometimes.
I wasn't just trying to kind of advertise, you know, because it's coming to an end anyway, but just to show that there is this whole thing going on that is very interdisciplinary.
Yeah, within the singular disciplines, we get stuck with our own jargons and assumptions and a narrow body of theory that we're looking at. And I think if you look at performance art from a visual art perspective, it's another different perspective from the theatre one that you've talked about today. But anyway, I wanted to ask what had come out in the research project in relation to performance and sport and performance art and sport.
Well, I can't speak for them. I don't know enough to know. I'd have to look it up. But I can tell you that one, you know, that it's a, first of all, it was a conceptual or a study of notions of play and game. And this whole idea of achievement. And of, you know, a kind of, what's the word, a training of the body, and the role, the sociological role of phenomena like football. You know, these big, they did a sociological study of how, you know, football has come to replace or takes on the role of and the whole dynamics between the game and the supporters and identity, how identity is often, you know, in some places defined by which football club you stand by, etc. So I think they looked at it more in that sociological sense, but I'll look into it, give you a better answer.
Okay. Well, I think it's time to move on. Because it's now the other conference. But I want to say, when you speak with all performativity for performativity and liminar, and I think all the time about the theories of Antonin Artaud with the theater, with the presence, also with the metaphysic way.
The double. No?
And nothing is just. I think it's quite present.
The theater of
the cruelty.
Of the cruelty.